wind comes in four corners, four directions, four colors. And death rides on four horsemen, a black snake with some black tanks. How much money do these companies need to make? They could drop their product, but they wanna save a buck. Already extracted billions, when is enough enough? I used to be in the oil fields, getting paid. But I quit, cause oil water I can't drink. Look down and see Kamimi La die in the mud. I looked up and told myself that enough's enough. Money does not own my soul, living comfortable. It's not in my plans, my hands in the sand. Some things worth more than gold. Some things they can't be sold. Some things can't be replaced. She is your mother, the fresh water is her veins.
All right, we got a great show for you today. We're joined with Jessica from the Industrial Workers of the World, also the General Defense Committee. We had her on the show in September, right before the prison strike kicked off. She was talking about her experiences organizing for that, among other things. And she also touched on resistance at the Dakota Access Pipeline up in North Dakota that she had been out to with some comrades. Today, though, we're going to be talking to her about organizing in Iowa. Right there, they're fighting along the Mississippi River, along with a group called Mississippi Stand, that area of the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. So there's a smaller group of people, they're out there fighting the pipeline, which they're trying to put in through eminent domain, and they really need support. So we kind of wanted to use this episode to highlight what people in other areas outside of North Dakota, which aren't getting as much media attention, are actually doing on the ground. So really thank Jessica for coming on the show. We want to thank everybody for listening, and we want to also announce to everybody that we have a brand new t-shirt that's out. It's $20 if you want to get it. It says it's going down on the top. There's a picture from the Milwaukee Uprising. It also says choosing sides, getting organized, it's going down.org. You can sport it. It's cheap, feels nice, it's soft. Please get some. If you're part of a group, Info Shop, Radical Bookstore, Project, if you're going on tour, if you want to get some to go to an anarchist book fair or something like that, please get in touch with us. We can do a bulk order for cheaper. If you just want to get one for yourself, it's $20. Just pay through the website like you're donating. If you want to give us a couple extra bucks to help keep us going, that's great. But all money raised will go to support It's Going Down, the website, and people that run it. So please, if you can, donate, get some shirts, help us out. Also, one of our people that's involved in the project is doing a trip to Mexico in the next couple months. So we're fundraising to get them down to Mexico. They're going to be making connections with different groups there. They're going to be interviewing people and talking to different projects, movements, media collectives, all that sort of stuff. So if you enjoy everything that It's Going Down is covering as far as what's happening in Mexico, please help us out. We've got a lot of amazing stuff cooking for you. So without further ado, here's Jessica. Thanks for joining us. And please get a t-shirt. Please sign up to become a monthly sustainer for It's Going Down. Please help us meet our monthly fundraising goal. We're going to continue to bring you podcasts. We're going to continue to bring you daily news and analysis. Please help us out. Please help us grow. Help us expand. Help keep It's Going Down around for the long haul. Thank you. All right, we're joined here today with Jessica, rank and file member of the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, also a member of the General Defense Committee, and they've been involved in the ongoing pipeline resistance camp in Iowa called Mississippi Stand. It's a project to stop the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline along the Mississippi River. A lot of people have heard what's going on at the Standing Rock Reservation. So we're going to talk to Jessica about what's been happening in Iowa, and she's also been out to Standing Rock in North Dakota, so we're going to kind of connect those two struggles. But Jessica, just to start off, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in pipeline defense in Iowa.
So Bell. I was going out working with people in Pine Ridge when they were doing their moccasins on the ground trainings, preparing communities of people for non-violent action, your rights trainings, medic skills, all those things. So I was a part of going to those trainings. And I made a commitment that they were going to cross this pipeline through the territory in which I inhabit. Or if it's a pipeline that's going to either go through the territory that I inhabit or that will impact the territory and the land that I'm on, I'm going to fight that. Also in solidarity with indigenous people whose land I inhabit. Other things about me. I'm very active in the General Defense Committee of the Union and the African People's Caucus. I'm very active in the police brutality movement and the broader Black Lives Matter struggle as well, the Twin Cities.
Right, yeah, we've had you on the show before. We talked to you right before the prison strike, and it's great for you to be back.
And I walk, yeah.
Right, totally. Well, let's just talk about, so what is Mississippi Stand? Is it a group? Is it a movement? Is it both? And what are people on the ground trying to do with their actions? And, like, kind of just kind of paint a picture for people, like, what type of project are they trying to build in Iowa that people are fighting right there?
So Mississippi Stand Camp was established August 31st by one person. Her name's Jessica Resnicek. I've known her since the Occupy days in Iowa, which is where I'm originally from. And this started with one person. She basically stood up there, said, "No, I'm not leaving," in this ditch area that was, there's a ditch that was inhabited for quite some time by water protectors, which is right by the driveway you go up to go to the boring site. So Mississippi State Camp was established in solidarity with Standing Rock, understanding the best way to show solidarity with indigenous struggle is not necessarily everyone go rush to that location, but to fight on different fronts of the struggle in a strategic way. So this was where they were boring under the Mississippi River, and the goal of Mississippi Stand was to stop the pipeline construction, but the primary focus was on the boring operations under the Mississippi River, which if polluted, would impact the drinking water of 18 million people. And that's not even the Missouri River, we're just talking about the Mississippi River. And so it started with one person, and it grew. It kept growing and growing, and we had a number of direct actions that were done. There was big swarms that happened on the boring site itself that stopped construction for a while, that stopped boring operations. People locked down to the boring machine itself. I and others, locked down to the vac truck, the dumping truck that was necessary for their operations. And then that kind of culminated into one of the biggest or most successful action was taking over the dump site. So just to explain the relevance of the dump site and these dump trucks, when they bore under the Mississippi River, all the sludge and for instance, the toxic sludge that comes from their fracking chemicals and all the debris that comes up has to be sucked out and dumped somewhere. And if they don't have, if they're not able to do that, if they're not able to suck all of that stuff out and have a place to dump it, they couldn't bore under the Mississippi River. So when we did shutdowns of the vac trucks, they weren't able to bore. And when we took over the dump site, we were there for about 4 days. We know for at least 2 days was strategic in terms of them not being able to dump at that site. At the dump site, we had multiple lockdowns. We had the trailer was a blocking part of the blockade. Then we had someone on top of the trailer. We had someone locked under the trailer. And then we had a barrel in the back that people were locked down to the ground. And it was a situation, the firefighters and the police, they just left.
This is like the iconic image where there's like a trailer and it's got the graffiti. It says no.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yep. And so they just left. They didn't know what to do with it. Which is pretty amazing. Like, we got the trailer back. We're winterizing it, one of the sites they originally stopped using. I think in part because one of the lockdowns brought attention to the fact that they were dumping in an unlined pit, which was seep into the groundwater. Which,
Jesus.
And, yeah, that's the one we took over was in an unlined pit. And then the other one was an unlined pit, and if it would have, say, rained, something like that, it would have just, all that sludge would have gone into the Des Moines River. So we brought attention to that. And I think they were overflow anyway, but our assessment is that once we took over that dump site, they didn't care if there was overflow. They just started using the other site. And there's one day they were just really sporadic, like there's multiple times where our water protectors were attacked. So one of them is when we were doing the blockade, where we were at the blockade, the DAPL security, Dakota Access Pipeline security, they're always having their eyes on us and watching us in the Meridian across the highway. Well, apparently they're watching really closely, and they saw that a water protector was kind of, they were wandering past the boundary line established by the police for what is public road, and they swerved outside the Meridian, parked on the side of the road, and they hopped out of their cars and sprinted to detain him. Mind you, they were trying to detain him on land that wasn't, it's not even DAPL land. It's not public land, but it's not their jurisdiction to do that. And luckily, we had a lot of people. They did. He was de-arrested. They did detain them. They weren't successful in that. Also, later on in the day, there were people corner them on the road, make sure they couldn't follow them. They even threw not a water protector, but just a resident of Keokuk out of their car onto the ground and said, "Don't fuck with us." They bumped into our water protector's car and said, "You don't fuck with us. I'll show you who I really am." And they mind you, these young women, one is 21, one is 17. And then finally, later on in the day, we had two water protectors who were going through Illinois who were leaving to go back home. And then on the way, they're doing a little bit of scouting. And DAPL security saw them, again, being very aggressive in their cars. And then the police got involved. And the police took DAPL's word. Mind you, the police arrived when they were on public property, public road. And the police just listened to DAPL and they said, "Oh, well, they were on our private property," with no evidence, just taking DAPL's word for it. And then when one of our water protectors said, "You do not have permission to search my vehicle," the police said they can do whatever they want. This is Illinois. Shit. So allowing DAPL to search through people's vehicles and cars and shit. This is a very blatant collaboration.
Right.
So that was a crazy day. And frankly, it was one of those days we were trying to hold down the dump site. But we frankly did not have the numbers we needed to intervene when we needed to. So this kind of brings me to the last part of this. There's a part of this boring operations that's really important. So when they bore, they're boring, and then they're done and they're boring, they have to pull the piping through and kind of in a very, one fell swoop. It's very time sensitive, and they still rely on the ability to dump sludge back and forth very rapidly to be able to do this. And if we would have had the ability and the numbers to stop those trucks for a given length of time, that might have fucked up their whole process. That would have fucked up their whole process, and they would have had to redo a lot all over again. But the situation is we didn't have the numbers to do it, and they bored under the Mississippi River. And so, yeah, so that happened. There's still so a lot of us in the direct action crew of Mississippi Stand, and this is also especially when stuff was going on in North Dakota, the big conflict that has made international headlines. We saw that and we're like, you know what, we need to go to the next strategic place. We need to take our caravan and we need to go to North Dakota. So we went to Minnesota, started to prepare to winterize and get ready to do that. However, right now we are actually in the process of, we are currently still doing some scouting and figuring out where is the strategic place for us to go. Being calm, because all of us being centered in one location where things are, where the police are super militarized, where the state is strong, protection of that area is strong, it may not be the best place for us to go. We're actually still in the process of figuring some leads out. But once we do go, we have a place established. We're going to need to have our own, wherever we're at, we have our own crew, our own camp for ways to, for people to plug in.
Okay, great. Well, let's take it back to Iowa just for a second. So can you describe just the local response to this? Like, are there a lot of people pissed off? Like, what it, like, if you could get a sense of the average kind of feeling about the pipeline going through the water there next to where all these people live, and like who is coming out to fight the pipeline that lives there in the local area?
So in Iowa, they did the big thing that is a contentious issue is the fact that this pipeline is going through because of the use of eminent domain to build this pipeline is very controversial. There's a lot of Iowans who, on that principle alone, were very angered by it. And they did a survey or study, and most Iowans wanted some more feedback, some more involvement in this decision. I mean, they just pushed this through as fast as possible. For obvious reasons, money talks. And where we had the camp was located in Keokuk, Iowa. That is located in the poorest county in Iowa. So you have a lot of people who didn't like the pipeline, who quietly supported. And no, oh, let me go back. We could not have done what we did without community support. People bringing us food and firewood and giving us places to stay, and some folks who were really holding it down at the camp with us. That was vital. But I would say for the majority of people were too scared to get involved, too scared, felt like it was a done deal, quietly supportive, but not getting involved. And granted, this has been, the people have been fighting in that area, different places in Iowa, for long before this became a popular topic with the pipeline, like for years, like 3 or 4 years, something like that, people have been fighting this. Had this on their radar. I think there's maybe more community outreach that maybe was more than we could have done in our camp when it started. It was important. But yeah, there's, I would say, community people were involved, but it wasn't masses of community people. When I was there on the front lines, granted, it started August 31st. I showed up in October. Mm-hmm. So there's that as well. And change of seasons and all that stuff plays a role.
Are people, do you get the sense that people are also afraid that these things will break? I know in Alabama there was just, you know, a huge explosion, and I think in, it was Alabama and Georgia, maybe a month ago, there was a state of emergency that was called due to pipelines breaking, but that's something that people are thinking about as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would say most people are definitely thinking about that, and it's not that they, fact that people not realizing that are being on our side, it's more to do with people's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And also the self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, well, it's done anyway, right?
Right.
But then also there's another thing, like there's a lot of misinformation. Like some people didn't even know that they're going under the Mississippi River, you know?
So. Are they using like the, are they like saying like, oh, well, if the pipeline comes, the jobs will come and stuff like that, and you're going to get a job if this is here? Are they kind of using that type of, you know, myth? Are they putting that out there?
Well, they always put that out there, right?
Yeah.
Extractive industries and pipelines. Yeah, that's definitely in the mix, and some people buy that. It does seem though like a lot of, again, people in their local towns are not happy that this is going through. Even the sheriff of Keokuk, where we're at, was going through his property. He wasn't really happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing. Like, if you look at, you know, North Dakota, originally they wanted to put it in this, next to this,
yep,
this white community in Bismarck, and they said, hell no, you're not putting this shit in my backyard. I think that's the thing. It's like, everywhere it goes, nobody wants it, but, you know, sometimes it's like, well, if it's over there, it's fine. Well, I was wondering if we could switch gears and talk about the Standing Rock camp and your experiences there, like the first time that you went there, because on the show so far we've had somebody from the Red Warrior camp, but we didn't really get into just kind of like how the camp is organized, what is life like in the camp, and just kind of like the overall experience day to day. And I was really hoping if you could touch on that.
Well, there's a lot of different camps out there. I mean, there's the big camp, there's Red Warrior Camp, there's Sacred Stone Camp, which is the first camp that got started. There was Sacred Ground, and that was recently evicted by the police, which that was directly in the path of the pipeline. I've been to all of them except for Sacred Ground. There's a lot of different things out there. For one hand, there's a lot of the beauty of people living together in such large numbers and, you know, sharing food and resources, and it's been an important place specifically for Native people to be able to be in spaces that are drug and alcohol free, to reconnect with spiritual, cultural practices. They even have a school out there for young children to be a part of. So you see people creating their alternative structures, and that's really amazing. I feel like there's a lot of confusion, especially for non-Native people going out there, and I think especially for non-Natives that are white who go out there, about where to orient yourself, how to be the most effective, because ethnic group or group of people is a monolith. Have a lot of voices saying this or that. A common refrain is, well, you need to listen to the elders. Well, the thing is, though, like, who are the elders, right? Who are these elders? What's the difference between elders and olders, because among these people who are considered elders, there's not agreement. And that's really come up. My understanding is tensions between people who are very focused on, no, we need to do direct action and militant direct action to stop this pipeline, to hold our ground, and those who are very focused on, well, we just need to pray, and that's what we should be doing. And have been a pacifying force. And I would argue, from my understanding of what I've read and I've seen, is like not just pacifying, but doing things that benefit, collaborate, is a form of collaboration with state. So that's just there's a lot of politics. The politics out there are complicated. So I see that's going to be a really key thing that needs to be sorted through if we're going to win that.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, but Crime Think came out with an article yesterday, and this is written from the perspective of somebody that is white, is an anarchist going into the camp, and they describe something that's very much like what you describe. Can you talk about this nonviolent direct action consultants hired as camp leaders? Is this a real thing? Okay. This is something I've seen on Warrior publications too, but just that, like, people, from what I read from Rising Tide, were basically brought in to be nonviolent teachers and, like, kind of like share nonviolent direct action skills. But the way that was kind of coming across was, you know, basically downplaying other modes of resistance.
I know there's been folks in Iowa camp, our camp in Iowa, people from Rising Tide came out and were really important help.
Mm-hmm.
I know we didn't pay them either. They were just contributing their skills and knowledge. And I know at least in the, I know with our camp in Iowa, some of us, we've developed direct action trainings because we saw the big need for that. So we did direct action, know your rights, security culture, all that. And we always stress, and I always stress when I do this, that as a camp, say Mississippi Stan, this is we're taking a nonviolent strategy. We're employing a nonviolent direct action and non-sabotorial strategies stop the pipeline. That's what we're doing as a camp. However, emphasizing the point that within all resistance movements, there are different tactics, and that it is not our job to collaborate with the state to shame the tactics of other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that a lot of us in the Mississippi Stand Camp, and when we came, that was something really important we wanted them to bring. And so that is something it seems like in the other camps needs to be emphasized more as well. Again, there's a difference between so it's funny when you talk about nonviolent direct action, sabotage is put in the context of violence, which is ridiculous when we're talking about material, like objects that are not people. And that's another thing we found is really important to combat that, because that's just reproducing capitalist logic that property is more valuable than people.
Can you talk about that? Because there's been a few high profile sabotage actions. Like, how has that reverberated within the ANSI pipeline movement? Is that something that people kind of talk about, or some people are like quietly like, hooray, and other people are like, oh my God, this is horrible? So, like, how does it kind of play out?
There's a mix of different views. I'll just say within Iowa, in our camp here, I think we did a really good job. And I'm looking at the other camps, too, at their Facebook, like, the official Facebook pages, I think it's been a good job of not shaming these other tactics.
Mm-hmm.
We emphasize for many reasons, like, well, okay, that was done there.
Right.
Like distinguishing that. There's some people who think that's groups that have said, well, this is bad, this is horrible, and it's giving a bad name to water protectors, which I think is absolute bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
definitely shut that down.
If you want to talk about a way that's going to stop something that doesn't harm human or animal or plant or whatever kind of life, I mean, that seems like... Because, eventually, if it's going to cost them so much money and they're like, well, we're not going to do this anymore, you know?
Potentially. There's a lot of things with that. Like, I think in general, the whole campaign, we think, like, okay, so obviously our goal is to stop the pipeline. How are we actually thinking we're going to stop the pipeline? Do you think because of our presence and our activity we'll stop it because Obama's going to intervene?
Right.
Do you think it's going to stop because our literal action
Mm-hmm.
Or is it going to stop because we're going to scare investors so bad they're just going to say fuck this? I think that's another thing we need to be talking about. But I think in general we need to be more understand that we're in a war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of it in that context, I just think very clearly about, okay, what are our numbers? What are our supplies? Where are their weak spots? Where are their strong spots? And vice versa for us. Thinking those really clear ways is important. And I think I know there's folks in all these other camps that are definitely on that, but it's hard because there's a lot of... in the mix, you have people that I would say don't see it in that way, and that creates issues. But, yeah.
Well, can you kind of talk to that? I mean, I think you bring up a really, really important point. People thinking like, because like in the Crime Think report, they were saying that some of the people that were trying to get people off the bridge in the confrontation with the police a couple of days ago were saying like, their line of thinking were like, we need the police to come in and arrest us because then it will look so bad in the media that people will support us.
Oh, yes.
I mean, like that kind of thinking, like to me, that's like akin, like you said, like, there seems to be people that are really hoping the Democratic Party, whether it's Obama or Hillary or whoever, will kind of come out in support of it. And then other people seem to think like, okay, well, the media will show that the police are violent and therefore people will support us. How have you kind of interacted with those kind of positions?
It's because it's this power.
Mm-hmm.
As if we can just going to just appeal to their moral interests. Like, or rather, the public will see how brutal it is, and the state is just going to want to stop it to stop it. I mean, they're drawing off the civil rights movement with this view of that's because that was a strategy. But it's a problem is people don't look at the context that they're in and how and also the complexities of these movements that have employed some similar tactics. And it's been a problem also with this idea of like we're just gonna get arrested for media attention. Like I and others did I got arrested doing a lockdown on one of the trucks, and in a sense you could maybe one could argue that it was a attention gator thing to get people there. But also it actually stopped construction.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal wasn't just to give myself or anyone for some of us to give yourselves to the police or to walk up to the police, like, okay, arrest me. Like, no. It's to actually do what you can to stop it yourself. Whereas you have the problem of people doing these actions of, like, all right, we're all going to go where the police know we're going to be at. We're telling them we're doing this, and they're there as we do it. It's fake. It's not real resistance. It's just a show. It's a problem of thinking of this work as movement work, or what do you want to call it, resistance as a theater instead of a war.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then also just really sad here with the how people were acting. You know, seeing it where I was at throughout different struggles in general, and then also hearing about recently that mindset Standing Rock, because it's people not really believing in our collective power. It's giving our power to those who have no interest in who are not there to serve us or whatever the fuck. Like, so mm-hmm. That's a problem. Like that learned that helplessness, that not understanding. No, we have power. I mean, with numbers has been involved in this campaign. It's not a matter of numbers. It's really a matter of our organization and mindset, I think, at this point. Though, to be fair, we do need more people involved. But.
Yeah, totally. Well, let me switch gears a little bit. So with the latest police action in North Dakota, right off the bat, people started taking action. I know there was a couple like occupations of Hillary offices and things like that. There's been protests and marches, acts of vandalism, different things have happened in solidarity. What do you think makes the most sense for people in different locations, like generally, to like take action? Like, do you think, like, what do you think would a good strategy would be for people trying to plug into the Dakota Access Pipeline struggle if they're like, I just can't go, but I can do something here?
Okay, yeah, there's targets all around you. There's I don't have it on hand, but there's been many articles about who's investing in this pipeline. There's banks.
Mm-hmm.
And things like, so, yeah, who's investing in this pipeline? Also, I know I'm in Minneapolis, and Hennepin County, which is in Minneapolis, is in, has sent police to Standing Rock to brutalize people on the beginning to make sure just serving the oil industry, essentially, and actions that put pressure in your local area on the police or create such civil unrest that they're forced to bring the police back, or because it costs so much money. Because people are costing them money, they're forced to bring police back. Whatever way you want to do that, that's tremendously helpful. I know in Wisconsin, my understanding is that they pulled some police back after some public outcry or some work that was done on that. See if you can get the police if you're in an area where they're sending police to not do that. And what are the targets that you have in your area? Also, fundraisers. I know with Mississippi Stand, we're still in the process of figuring things out, but we're going to be establishing our base of operations, our camp, to continue doing direct actions that are strategic to stop this pipeline. We definitely need support. Throw a fundraiser for us, that'd be huge. Also, legal fund. We're in a situation right now where, yes, there's been a decent amount raised for the but it's pretty tapped out. So you have a lot of us who did lockdowns who are pleading not guilty. Well, because we don't know what our fees are going to be or when we're going to have that. We don't have funds necessarily for us right now. I want to bring up my friend Cameron Kennedy, who's a longtime movement person, anarchist, who did the same lockdown that I did on the same truck. Well, different location on the truck, but the same truck, so it's the same action. I got two simple misdemeanors, and yet he's facing 2 years in prison for his lockdown. That was an escalation against him, against the, just trying to scare people, what have you. And so, yeah, facing 2 years, he raised a lot of money with his legal, for the legal fund when he did his action, and still, but there's not necessarily funds to help him or us. And it's what he's doing is really important, because not only is he just fighting it for himself, but he's making sure a precedent isn't established in Iowa and throughout the United States where people who are doing sorts of lockdowns can be charged for, can be charged and sentenced for these ridiculous time periods.
Yeah, I've heard like in North Dakota, they're charging people at least with like a really high bail fee if they were arrested because there was fire involved and stuff like that on the bridge. So definitely, if you're listening to this and you can set up a benefit, really need it. Where do you see the struggle in Iowa specifically going in the next couple of months? Like, because it seems like this is a pretty important moment before winter hits. It seems like they're really trying to kind of push in a real way before it gets really cold.
To be honest, this is also, we're actually still in the process of figuring things out, scouting.
Yeah.
We know we'll be sitting at the base of operations up somewhere, maybe Iowa, maybe another place. We're going to go where it's most suited for us to go. I don't have more information to give right now.
Okay.
But that's something I can get out to you, as well as ways if people want to do fundraisers as well. Just hit us up on our Mrs. B Stand Facebook page. We can best coordinate that until we get back to you. If there's any last questions, I can answer them. I actually need to get ready for work.
No, just anything else you want to add? I know this weekend there's an action camp in Florida against the pipeline there, and obviously there's everything going on in all these other places. Any words of wisdom or ways that people can look at what Mississippi Stand has done or kind of keep up, or if they do want to organize a benefit and get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so I would just say, if you can't, just think about how can you be the best use of your limited resources and your time. Not everyone can drop everything and go out to these camps, but everyone can. People can do fundraisers. People can focus on the areas where they're located at, where that would be strategic, that are either investing in the pipeline or providing police to protect the pipeline. And so focusing on that front would be huge. And then if you are someone who can pick up everything and go, I would say, if you think about, who do you know out in North Dakota to plug into? I mean, because it's a big camp, and if you're a person, you can get lost in the mix pretty quick if you're just an individual that may not know anybody. I know with FAR camp, we're going to get our stuff situation figured out. We definitely can use people and bodies, people who can do research, people who have media. We definitely really need people who are people. We have different committees that people can plug into. And I will say that people involved in our camp, because of we have numbers, but we don't have the numbers that are in North Dakota. A little bit goes a long way. And just thinking about very strategically about how we fight this is important. I do say I see in the land defense movement or the movement against the oil industry, extractive industry, I do see this as a galvanizing moment of increased activity and just understanding we're gonna this pipeline. Regardless of what happens, when we beat it, there's going to still be other struggles. so the resistance movement is just is stronger than it was before it began.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us, Jessica, and it's great to have you on the show for the second time. Hopefully,
yeah.
Hopefully, there will be a third time, and good luck to everybody out there. And obviously, it's going down. We'll try to do everything we can to help spread word about Mississippi Stand and everything going on in Iowa. It's not just a Slipknot album. It's also a state where things are happening. So, yeah, thanks for joining us, and good luck out there, and let us know if we can do anything to help spread the word.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one. All right, you made it all the way to the very end. Thanks for joining us once again on the It's Going Down podcast. We really hope you enjoyed it. This is a great topic, very timely. We're getting these out as fast as we can possibly get them out. Again, we have new t-shirts, only $20. If you're part of a group, Project, InfoShop, Radical Space, Autonomous Project, and you want to get those shirts into your place of non-kind of business, whatever you got going on, please get at us. We can work some sort of bulk amount out. They're $20. Otherwise, every cent goes to support It's Going Down. Please keep us around for the long haul. Please donate. Help us meet our monthly goal. Become a monthly sustainer. Go on the website. Hit the donate button. You can sign up to give us a couple bucks every month. Please, every little bit helps. We're also sending one of our own to Mexico in a couple months, so we need help there too. So please, we're going to be bringing you a lot of stuff this month, so please help us out. Thanks for joining us, and again, we're here for the long haul. It'sgoingdown.org. Sign up on Twitter and Facebook to get all the updates. Check out the website every day. Every day we got new stuff coming out, so please stick around. You know we'll be here. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.
Ready for the war, we got our boots strapped. 100 deep on State Street with a troop set. The mayor lying, say didn't see the video footage, and everybody wanna know where the truth at. On the south side where it's no trauma centers but the most trauma. A lot of cannons but you don't want no drama. I can't imagine if it was my own mama. Got a firstborn son, stole from her. He never had a chance, and we all know it's cause he black. Shot him 16 times, how f***ed up is that? Now the police superintendent wanna double back. Cops speeding up to the block like a running back. Tension is high, man, these niggas is irate. You can see it in their eyes, they wanna violate. Screaming out, oink, oink, bang, bang. Gang, 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 gang. Murder, 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 they mind state. I just made me a meal and still militant. This ain't conscious rap, this sh** ignorant. The hair trigger ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun.
When I cock back, police better run.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 16 shots, and we bucking back. 16 shots. 16 shots, and we bucking back. 16 shots.
They threw a little girl down on the pavement. Pushed her with a bike and said, stay out the way, b-. She was bleeding on the ground through her braces. This what happen when don't stay in their places. The mayor dumping weight, he fired the superintendent. But resignation come with bonuses and recognition. So we gon' break in the stores on Magnificent Mall. And if we gotta go, let's go to prison in style. Cops killing kids and staying out of jail. But Bobby Shmurda can't even catch bail. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now I got everybody yelling out for 12.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
16 shots, and we bucking back. 16 shots. 16 shots, and we bucking back. 16 shots. Clip with an extendo, and we rolling with it hanging out the window. We on 16th riding by the police station. We might make a pork rind out of pig, bro. Somebody tell these motherfuckers keep their hands off me. I ain't a motherfucking slave, keep your chains off me. You better hope this 9mm jam on me or get blown. I hope you got your body cam turned on. Fuck a black cop too, that's the same fight. You got a badge, but you still ain't white. This for Laquan on site. When you see Van Dyke, tell him I don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.